Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
I want to talk to Joy Levy. Good afternoon to you, Joy.
Hey, Niall.
How you doing? And before we start, condolences to you, because I know it's coming up to the anniversary of your mother's passing. So my condolences to you and your family and your friends and everybody else who knew your mum as well.
Thanks
a young woman,
much.
67 years of age. She'd be dead now a year in January.
Yeah.
And first of all, just tell us about your mum, because I know you had mentioned that she was a great, strong-minded woman and a great role model for you and your family.
Yeah. Well, she had 6 girls and 2 boys. She was just very strong because we lost her dad when we were very young ourselves.
So there was 8 children for her to bring up on her own.
Yes, 6 girls and 2 boys.
Yeah, that was tough, I can tell you, wasn't it? It takes a strong woman to do something like that, all right.
It does indeed, yeah.
Okay, and she was quite young. She's only 67 years of age, but in 2017, she was diagnosed with cancer.
And yeah, all cancer.
Yeah, and do you remember when that happened? I mean, how was she? Did she handle that well?
Not too bad now, Niall, I have to say. Not too bad, but when it was kindly coming through that, when she could see. The mouth cancer wasn't too bad, like she was in pain and she was suffering, but it was mainly the colon cancer that really got to her.
Okay, all right, okay. And that would have required some level of surgery, I imagine, and
yeah,
obviously
but
treatment.
Yeah, she had, on the mouth she had chemo and radiation, and on her colon she had the operation.
All right, okay. So life became a little bit more difficult for her. And obviously, her kids, I mean, yourself, what have you, most of you are all grown up now at this stage. So how old is the youngest child?
20-something. I think he's nearly 25.
All right, so she had the whole parenting thing was done at that stage.
Yeah, so she's seeing our grandkids and our great-grandkids.
Yeah, and I'm sure she was an amazing and wonderful granny. But okay, take us back to January, early January, of course. Well, 4 days before that, before she passed away. And you were basically led to bring her to A&E. I mean, what was the reason she ended up in A&E?
Well, she hadn't been well for a couple of days before that, because she was just getting a biopsy done on her mouth, because her mouth was still a bit sore.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously she was bleeding after the biopsy, and it was going into the stoma bag, but we thought she was bleeding from her colon.
Okay. All right. As you would think that, of course. Yeah.
So we got the D-doc out that night, and he looked at her straight away and he said, "She's not a well woman."
Yeah.
Straight away, you need to get her to hospital. So me and my big sister, the eldest girl, Deirdre, we got an ambulance in that night, and it turned out that there wasn't blood in the stoma bag, that we were just panicking, but we ran tests and everything else, and everything came back okay. But then we found out that it wasn't okay in court today.
Okay, this is in the coroner's court when they gave you the reason as to why she passed away.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem for you was, here was a woman who had been diagnosed with cancer, had serious treatment, was in a lot of, I suppose, distress in some sense.
Pain.
And she was left sitting in A&E for how long?
Well, we got there about 9 o'clock that night. I think we left about 4 o'clock that morning.
Right, okay. So, shockingly, she was just left sitting on a trolley.
Yes.
And at any stage, did you explain to, triage, or did you explain to any of the doctors or nurses that she was very distressed and that she was very ill?
All that night. See, before this, my mum has been in and out of hospital because, I don't mean to be bad, but the treatment that she got in the Mater Hospital after colon, she just went downhill. Like, she was just pushed aside, that way?
Yeah,
I know, it's not the doctor's fault, but it's just after that, there was a catalogue of failures from when she got her colon out. They just let her down completely.
Yeah, and I know they performed loads of tests on her, and the results kind of prompted a query around her liver function, et cetera. So she had numerous problems at that stage.
Yeah, but at that time, we didn't know about the liver failure.
Yeah.
At that night, they didn't tell us. They said that they ran a load of tests, and all our tests came back clear. But she wanted to find herself out to go home, and they didn't tell us that they wanted to run more tests on our liver, because we would have kept her in the hospital all that night till the test came back.
Yeah. But they never told you that?
No. They never told us that they wanted to run a liver test on her.
And the reason, of course, that she was having probably liver problems was because, according to the coroner as well, that she had toxic levels of, medication, tramadol and other medications in her system.
Yeah. So yeah, or a morph.
Yeah. So that would have caused, obviously, the liver function problems as well. And
because she lost so much weight,
yeah,
like, you didn't even put her in a feeding tube, do you know what I mean? After, like, they should have realised how thin she was after getting. that she wasn't eating. They were, the dietitian was telling them to take down like her weight, record her weight, and was she already eating solids and all, and she wasn't.
So she, because of her oral cancer and the treatment that she got, she couldn't eat. She physically couldn't eat.
Yeah, exactly. And she was after having a biopsy because she was still in pain a week before we brought her into A&E.
Oh my, it's just like a catalogue of problems, really, wasn't it?
It was a catalogue of failures there.
Yeah. And but the biggest part of it as well for you guys, and what was probably very traumatic, was this whole experience of, you know, she was already extremely sick, very unwell. She was underweight. She had problems and she was very, very extremely sick by the sounds of things. And she's left lying on a trolley for 6 hours in A&E.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and she was asking for painkillers that night. They were giving her fizzy painkillers, which she couldn't take because her mouth was so sore.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no point giving her a painkiller if she can't take the painkiller because it's born in her mouth every time she takes them.
I mean, look, we've spoken before on the show about A&E and the risk to people, particularly people who are very, very sick. So, and they sent her home anyway. You were sent home and you didn't know about the liver function problems at that stage.
Yeah.
And what happened over the next 3 days? Did she just went downhill? She just got worse?
Yeah, she just was hallucinating. I think she actually slept for 3 days after we brought her home.
Okay.
Just in and out of sleep. She wasn't herself. She was hallucinating. And then you can imagine what her not eating and not drinking, what she was actually going through. Because I remember my sister made her a smoothie that night to see if she could get it down. And when I went out at 5 o'clock that morning, she was puking up everywhere.
Right, okay. So she just couldn't keep anything down at that stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because her body was kind of giving in, I suppose.
Giving in, exactly, yeah.
And she passed away peacefully, I hope, 4 days later after she got home from A&E. And since then, I mean, obviously the coroner's report has come back now to say that the cause of death was a cardiorespiratory arrest due to multi-drug toxicity, which is essentially to do with her liver. And do you accept that answer? Do you accept what the coroner said?
No, because the Mater Hospital told us that she had a genetic heart condition.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all went to get checked for it and it came back that none of us ever had it. And my mum hadn't got it, so it was just a bit confusing because they're saying it was misadventurous, but yet the hospital told us that she had a genetic heart condition.
Right, okay. So you don't accept the coroner's hit? And apart from anything else, you believe that when you brought her into A&E that they should have been more observant in relation to her kidney?
Exactly.
And they should have made you aware of that?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I know at the time the consultant emergency for medicine at the Mater Hospital, Dr. Thomas Breslin, said overcrowding conditions were not unusual. He said overcrowded conditions bring a higher risk of dying, and every nurse and doctor knows this is a massive problem for patients and it affects their care and their outcomes. Well, certainly it did affect your outcome. And he said he reviewed your mum's case and details, and there were questions we didn't know the answer to, and that we would have been the reason for keeping her in the department. That being said, you can understand why there is no clear issue a person would decide to leave.
Exactly. We wouldn't have let her leave if we hadn't known that they wanted to run a liver test on her. There's no way we would have let her leave.
Mm. Because basically she was putting her life in her hands leaving.
Exactly. And what got to us is because when she got her cancer, she said she wasn't ready to pass.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So she fought through that. And then
She's a young woman, you know, she's still a young woman.
Yeah, and then to get through all that and then to die of something so stupid.
Yeah. And I'm really sorry. I know it's upsetting for you to even talk about it. I know she's literally only, she's not even a year gone yet. So it's very, and it's more difficult for the family now coming up to Christmas. I suppose this will be your first Christmas without your mum. And for all the grandkids and all the children, it must be very difficult because you have a big family.
Yeah, very big, yes. 14 grandkids.
And what was Christmas normally like? Was it all over to your mum's house? Or
every year over to mum's house. She'd make the dinner. Grandkids would be around.
Yeah, I'd say that was a full house, was it, Joy?
Oh, yeah, very full.
Yeah, there was probably two sittings at the table for that one, with the kids sitting outside on sofas or
kids
something.
Sitting on the stairs.
Eating a bit of dinner. Yeah. I mean, I think our mums traditionally know how to make a Christmas happen, and I understand how that's difficult that's going to be for you. And I do understand, obviously, it's our first anniversary is coming up, and that's going to be even more difficult for you again.
Yeah.
So what's the next step? Firstly, you're disgusted with the fact that you don't believe that you were given enough information before she signed herself out of the hospital, but also the very fact that she was left sitting on a trolley for 6 hours with a woman that was in great pain and obviously extremely sick. You're not happy with that situation. So what's the next step for the family?
The treatment as well that she got through the cancer from the Mater Hospital, it wasn't right.
And do you reckon it was the treatment from the amount of, you know, the lack of appointments or the lack of care?
Yeah.
Or was it the doctors and nurses themselves?
Well, she had a stoma bag put on it and she only seen a stoma care nurse twice.
Right, okay.
So I had to do everything, and I'm not a trained nurse.
Right, okay, I get you, yeah. So you weren't shown how to do it properly, or no, you were given very basic level of training in it?
When my mum was in the ward, the nurse came in, showed me other sister how to do it, and then left. And then I had to, like, my sister had to train me, like, show me how to do everything.
Right, okay. And was there a meeting called maybe with the family and a doctor to go through everything with you and explain everything to you?
After my mum passed?
No, this is when your mum was sick in hospital. Was there a meeting, you know, with the whole family called with the doctor?
No, nothing like that, no.
Okay, all right. No, because obviously with her going home at the time when she was having her treatment and everything else, that there would have had to be some sort of intervention for the family.
Yeah, well, you were asked, would we be able for it? Yeah, of course we're going to do it. It's their mother, you know
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, we'd no training, we'd no qualifications or anything like that. Like, my mum's bag would leak, like, probably every night at, like, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd have to go up and go over and do it, you know, that way.
Right, okay. And was there anybody still living with your mum at that stage?
Yeah, my brother. My brother lived with her.
Okay, but the girls and what have you would pop over as well?
Yeah, well, see, because I was her carer.
Right, okay.
So, she wouldn't let the boys do anything. It'd be more the girls.
Well, of course, it's her dignity apart from anything
exactly,
else.
Yeah,
of course, I understand that. And did you live near her?
Well, I literally 10 minutes crossroads.
All right, okay. Well, that's really handy then for her, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure she was delighted to have you around, you know, for those final few months to help her out, you know, and there's nothing we can do, unfortunately, to ever bring her back. But what's the next step for the family now? What are you going to do now?
Well, we don't really know what to do now. It was just a shock that day. I think we're just starting to kind of realise that...
Yeah, process all the information.
Yeah.
But you're certainly not happy with the coroner's.
No.
I'm not too familiar with that, but similar to an ordinary court, the coroner's court, can you then appeal that? Or can you go back
I
and say...
I don't really know. I think I'm just going to have a look in to see what we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably try and just follow up what we can do and find out if there's more stuff we can do about it.
Well, look, it opens up a lot of questions. A, about the type of care that we give people. B, how we deal with people when they're allowed to go home and what care, aftercare. But also the biggest part of this as well is 4 days before she passed away that she sent home mainly after being lying there in a trolley for 6 hours, a very sick woman. Which is shocking. Shocking.
Yeah.
In any country, in any civilised country, it's shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, thank you very much for drawing attention to it. And I think, you know, hopefully people are listening and maybe more can be done to help people like your mum in the future, all right?
That's great,
wish you all, and look, I know it's not going to be an easy Christmas for you, but I'm sure your mum will be looking down at you, making sure that you don't burn the turkey, all right?
she will.
All right, listen, thank you very much indeed,
Thank you
Joy,
very
all right?
much, Niall, okay?
Thanks. Bye, Thanks. Bye. All right, that's a shocking story, a very sad story. There's a young woman, 67 years of age, Elizabeth Levy. She passes away because she's, well, look, it wasn't the hospital's fault as such that she died because she was left in the trolley for 6 hours. But when somebody is, you know, sadly at the end of life, and obviously the family don't accept the coroner's report, and that's their business if they don't want to accept that. And I'm sure there is some sort of legal recourse for them to look at that. But when somebody's at end of life or close to end of life or extremely sick, we don't treat them by leaving them on a trolley for 6 hours in A&E. You know, when they're that close to end of life, that is just, what sort of a country are we living in that we accept that? That people can accept that? It's absolutely shocking. And it's disgusting. And you know what? We should be ashamed of ourselves. We really should be ashamed of ourselves. I could make the argument that I give out about everybody during the week. We're talking about the whitewater rafting down at Spencer Dock here that we're going to spend 30 million on. So we can spend 30 million on something like that, but we can leave a woman for 6 hours in A&E. Now, I'm not suggesting it's about money. It's about priorities, isn't it? And I've spoken about this so many times over the last 4 weeks, particularly when I told you that I was in the Ulster in Belfast on a couple of occasions already, which was packed and I can be in and out an hour and a half max. How can we not get this right? How can the Minister for Health not get this right? I know it's not directly Simon Harris's fault because every Minister for Health has had the same problem, right? So it's not directly, but he's the man. It's his job at the moment, so he is responsible. And I believe if he can't fix this problem, or if any Minister for Health cannot get the target down, the target time, and I heard somebody from the patient advocacy group on one of the radio stations there during the week, you know, they were talking about somebody who had been in A&E for 16 or 17 hours, which is, by the way, not unusual in this country, saying that, oh, well, yeah, we fell short of our target of 6 hours. Target of 6 hours? In a modern country, we have a target in A&E of 6 hours. Somebody could be dead in 6 hours. 6 hours is unacceptable. The target should be an hour. And sure, if we fall short and hit 2 hours, well, that's a problem. We should be dealing with that. But to think that people are lying, dying, elderly people, One woman there recently, an 82-year-old, lying in her own urine for 9 hours. We should be ashamed of ourselves. What country allows that to happen? What modern country? There's third world countries that do a better health service than we have. We're a rich country. You might think it sometimes, but we have money. We fall short every now and again on different things and the way we supply things to people and the way we provide. We can't wave magic wands sometimes to build lots of houses to get rid of a crisis because you've got a growing population. I understand all that. But what modern, civilised country thinks it's acceptable for a dying woman to lie in a trolley for 6 hours? Thinks it's acceptable for an 82-year-old to lie in her own urine for 9 hours? Thinks it's acceptable to set a target time for accident and emergency in the main hospitals in this country for 6 hours? What country thinks that's acceptable? Simon Harris needs to fix this. It's his job at the moment. He's not personally responsible, but he is responsible as Minister for Health. And if he can't fix it, he should resign. And leave it to somebody who might be able to fix it. It's not the doctors and nurses' fault, generally speaking, although there are some wasters there. Most of them do a hard day's work. There's a lot of people walking around in A&E holding bits of paper in their hand. I don't know what they're doing. It's management at the top. It's badly run. The system is badly run. It needs to be fixed. And if you can't do it, get a Minister for Health who can do it. Resign.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic Hit.